This is head coach of the LA Lakers, Luke Walton. You're listening to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com.
Everybody, welcome back to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com. Out here in Los Angeles, I'm Joey Ramirez, and with the team on the road in South Beach is Mike Trudell. What's up, Mike?
Joey, how are you? It is good to be in Miami. In fact, we're going to be here for much of the week, honestly. The team just landed. It's the middle of the day on Tuesday, coming off that three-game win streak, and we're here until Thursday night's game, until finally getting to San Antonio. That game is on, is that Friday or Saturday? I think that game is on Saturday?
I think it's a Thursday game, actually, isn't it? No, Miami's Thursday.
Thursday, San Antonio, San Antonio Saturday.
Right, and then we're
finally back in Los Angeles. So, yeah, man, it's been a good trip so far, though. Lakers have obviously won the last two games, and last night's game in Atlanta, even though they did some things wrong, they still won very easily. So I guess that was a good sign, even when you consider that Atlanta is not boasting the best talent in the NBA by any means.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the sharpest game by the Lakers, but they had nine players score double figures, and that's the first time since 87, according to Elias Sports, which is kind of wild that since Showtime, no Laker teams has ever gotten nine guys in double figures. But like you're saying, they didn't have a great game, but they still managed to win by, I think, 19 or something like that. It's a good time to
123-104.
Yeah, and it's a good time to get some mailbag questions from Lakers fans who tweeted us, obviously on Twitter. You ready to go, Mike?
Yes, so that's what happened. Joey said, hey, do you want to do a mailbag pod? I said yes, sent out a tweet last night. Thank you guys for all of the responses that we're going to try to get to a good number of those right now. So the way it's going to work is Joey is going to read the tweet, and then one or both of us will answer. And a pretty simple formula, Joey.
Yep, pretty simple. Mike, AJ is going to kick us off, and AJ wants to know, who has been your most improved player over the course of the season?
So in the NBA, I would say it's been Victor Oladipo, and I'm not even sure that anybody is that close. Oladipo, if you look at his numbers, they are ridiculously better this year, and the minutes aren't even up that much. Usually what you see with you know, increased production is that you see a guy that just wasn't playing much and it's for a certain team, then ramped up his minutes all of a sudden because somebody got moved. Well, in this case, the thing that certainly helped Oladipo was the fact that he's not playing with Russell Westbrook anymore. He's definitely been the guy.
Yeah, sure.
But the impressive thing about that is you would think, okay, playing with Westbrook, theoretically, you would at least get more open looks because he is the center of the defense. And whereas this year, Oladipo has been the focus of the defense, yet he's shooting 48% this year, 37% from three. Last year, he was at 44% from the field and 36% from three. He's up about 9 points in the scoring margin. He's doubled his assists. His rebounds are up. His steals are up. He's doubled, in fact, his steals, and again, in the same amount of minutes. So that's got nothing to do with Westbrook, right? That's just him getting in better shape. So he's my long answer. Joey, I think you can make a case, though, to include Brandon Ingram in the candidates, and I will let you do that if you would like.
Yeah, so first of all, I totally agree with Victor Oladipo. I don't think that there's really any I think he's the clear front runner, especially considering that this is a guy who was drafted number two overall. Some pegged him not necessarily as a bust, but as someone who vastly underplayed his draft stock, and now he looks like that guy that who even drafted? Was it Orlando drafted him? That Orlando thought they were getting back in 2013. He looks like that guy now. So I do agree with Victor Oladipo. But yeah, Brandon Ingram. And we actually had a question about, that touched on this. Was that what would it take for Brandon Ingram to become most improved player this year? Like, what would he have to do on top of what he's already done? And in short, they don't really tend to give these kind of awards to guys in their second year, especially when you have a guy like Oladipo who's making this jump in the fifth year. Voters tend to think that's a little more impressive, whereas jumping from rookie to sophomore tends to be a little more expected. But as you're saying, Brandon Ingram, I think, does deserve to be in the discussion because of the way he's just told, he's essentially completely taken a step in just about every category. He's one of the best finishers in the game when it comes to finishing at the rim. As a playmaker, he has just taken multiple steps because when you looked at the way that when the Lakers would have him play point guard last season, it kind of felt like the square peg in the round hole, where it's just like, well, he does have a very wide encompassing skill set, but he's not necessarily a guy you want running point. This year, he has been just so successful running point that it's to the point where when Lonzo Ball comes back and where the Lakers trade for Isaiah Thomas, they're still having Brandon Ingram run point in the starting unit because it's just been so successful for them. And his rebounding numbers are up. He's more engaged defensively, and he's shooting the three ball pretty well for the last couple games.
So I'm just tweeting this right now because as you were talking about that, I wanted to check some of the numbers. And in February, Joey, let me just give you his February splits for Ingram: 18.6 points on 54.5% from the field and 52.2% from three. How about 5.6 assists, 5.2 rebounds, 1.1 blocks, and 0.6 steals to 2.4 turnovers. Those are some pretty good numbers for a 20-year-old. Now, on the season, that's upped his numbers to around, you know, still similar, 16.2 points, 5.4 rebounds, almost 4 assists. But, man, that's a good stretch, too, of games. And they only have this one final game in February against Miami. So just even a normal game for him will lock in that month of production. And I always like to look – I think a month is a good enough sample size. You know, not to extrapolate over the year or anything, but just to show kind of a window in time. And it's you know, a good 14, 15 games. And so very impressive from Ingram there. While you mentioned Oladipo was the number two pick in 2013. Quick trivia question for you. I was just thinking about this while you're talking. Who is the one player drafted number two overall that hasn't been taken by the Lakers since Oladipo?
The one player that hasn't been taken by the Lakers that was a number two pick?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
man.
So there have been four number two picks, right?
Right.
Since Oladipo.
So there's been
only one.
Right. So by process of elimination, you had Russell, Ingram, and Lonzo all taken by the Lakers in succession. So that would mean 2014. Jabari Parker.
Yes.
Hey.
Nicely done. I knew you'd be there for it. That was one. Was that the year you start? What year did you start working with us?
I started working 2014. Yeah, so that was Julius Randle's rookie year.
That was your first draft class. There you go. All right, nicely done.
Anything you wanted to add on Ingram? Because we have let me shift the conversation just a
little.
No,
yeah, let's get to the next. Yeah, let's get to the next question. Yeah.
So Power Go, keeping on the Ingram track, Power Go is asking, how are Zoe and Ingram looking together? Ingram has done a great job as the point guard, and Zoe may benefit playing off the ball. How do you see that pair working together moving forward? So what do you think about those two skill sets on the floor at the same time, with Ingram having an added focus on playmaking?
With Ingram and Lonzo?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I like them in general together. I just think they're both smart basketball players. I think that especially with the way that Lonzo plays, that's going to just create a couple of more easy opportunities for Ingram. But the thing that I like about Lonzo too, though, you can have a guy like Ingram that's not just a secondary playmaker, but at times a primary playmaker, because Lonzo in the half court isn't going to demand the ball and, you know, call for a screen and, you know, need to go through that whole song and dance. And, like, you know, sometimes that's what Isaiah Thomas will do if he's on the floor. You know, he really likes to set things up. And, you know, the thing about Isaiah Thomas, that's okay, because he's usually going to get you a good shot out of that. That's one thing that I think, you know, sometimes you get guys will get a bad rap for that. Like James Harden is another example, Chris Paul. If you're going to get me a wide open shot, then sometimes it's okay to monopolize the ball for that amount of a possession. But the way that Luke Walton wants the team to play, generally speaking, he wants that to be sort of a last resort. He wants the ball to be popping. And I think that Lonzo on the floor helps reinforce that with Ingram. So to me, Joey, I think that's a nice pairing. And also defensively, what we've seen lately, I mentioned that Ingram's over a block a game in February. He had three blocks last night. He had three blocks a couple of games ago. He's starting to now, since the Lakers have had other players stepping up offensively, Ingram's starting to have a little bit more energy defensively, and then you're really starting to see that length come into play, you know, where all of a sudden he's just flying over for a block, or he's, you know, he's swatting somebody like Carmelo Anthony going up for a jump shot, which is something you wouldn't expect to see too often. So that is what's encouraging about it to me. How about you?
Yeah, you know, going off of that, it's a lot of fun seeing Brandon learn to use his length in real time. If you look at the way he was using that wingspan last year or even at the beginning of this season, you can see subtle differences. You can see that he's smarter going up and protecting the rim and not coming so much forward and getting called for the fouls as often. He's going straight up more often. He's stripping guys by coming in basically horizontally, just reaching his arm out and knocking it out of their hands. And I'm very curious, because I think that's where his defensive ceiling is going to be defined, is with that length. With how much can he, when you look at a guy like Giannis, who's freakishly long, and he's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate who also shoulders a massive load on the offensive end. Now, ideally, Brandon Ingram won't be having to have as big of an offensive workload in the future when this team is in contention. But at the same time, actually even more so, you would expect that he would have more energy on the defensive end, like we were just kind of talking about right now. And if he really can muster that length and has that energy on that end, then I think his defensive ceiling is going to be a lot higher than what we're seeing right now. And it's looking pretty good right now. And going back to the original question of Lonzo and Ingram looking together, Brandon Ingram at point guard in a 10-game sample, he's averaging 19 points, 6 assists, and the Lakers are 7-3. So it's been a very good stretch. Obviously, most of that has been without Lonzo. But when they have been on the floor together, it's worked nicely because, like you're saying, Lonzo isn't exactly – he's not a point guard that needs the ball in his hands. He doesn't need to dominate the ball like a Chris Paul or even, you know, like a James Harden, like you're saying. Ironically, those guys are both on the same team now, and they've kind of figured it out too. But at the same time, my point is that Lonzo doesn't need the ball in his hands. Ingram doesn't need the ball in his hands. They're more than comfortable trading off. And I like Lonzo getting a little more some more spot-up attempts. You and I were talking about this yesterday. He's shooting about 42% from three in his last 13 games. So Lonzo's found his stroke, at least for the time being. And he's not, and I think a lot of that has to do with him not taking a bunch of, let me just go ISO with the guy, step back on him, try to hit a tough three-pointer. It's more, let me use my basketball IQ to find out exactly where on the perimeter I need to spot up to give my guy the best passing lane and to give myself the most open of a look possible. And I think defenses are getting to the point where they need to start reacting more to Lonzo, because we saw the Hawks play off of him for all three of his three-pointers. They gave him way too much space. They finally cracked down and ran out on him on a potential fourth attempt. And he attacked the Clez out and got Julius Randle to the hoop. So to me, that's Lonzo showing his IQ. And then that's also defenses needing to maybe jump out on him a bit more.
All right, yeah, that's good stuff. Along those lines, you texted me during the game about Lonzo's shooting percentage from three, especially for the last 13 games. So I'm assuming you had some questions about Lonzo's shooting. Joey, is there anything you want to pull up there?
You know what, Mike? We do not have a single question about Lonzo's shooting. I was kind of surprised about that too. But I assume you want to make a point about it.
I mean, you could have helped me out a little bit and just made one up. And
here's one from Joey from Los Angeles. Hey, Mike, what do you think about Lonzo's shooting?
Yeah. Hey. Imagine that. What you texted me was his percentage, and I'll have to, if I'm remembering, it's around 42.1% or something like that. Is that right for his last 13 games?
That sounds about
42
right.
42 point something. Yeah. So, here's the point, and since there weren't a lot of questions on it, that's good. Maybe people are kind of not realizing. Lonzo struggled to shoot at first. There could not have been any more pressure on him. Every time he missed a shot, he was asked about it. I think it just built. A little bit like when somebody's in a free throw slump. He clearly was not that bad of a shooter. He shot over 40% from three at UCLA. He was always a good three-point shooter in high school. The shot looks good in practice. His coaches kept saying it. So everybody kept telling us, look, the numbers are going to come up. And I just feel it's our responsibility to point out that Lonzo was right in that context. So is Luke Walton. The shot was fine. They don't need to rework it. He's drilling threes. Luke even told me after the game last night that if teams – you know, he expects teams essentially to stop just going under every single screen with Lonzo and giving him these wide open looks. And if that's the case, if they're going to go over in the screen, guess what's going to happen? Either the roll man's going to be wide open or somebody else in the perimeter is going to be open if somebody has to dig down and help on the roll man. So it's a good thing for the offense if a guy has to go over the screen like they do on Steph Curry, for example. And it doesn't mean that Lonzo's going to run out of open looks because teams are still going to go under once in a while. But that's really the point to make on this. It's not just that the shooting is fine. He's come around. It's helped the rest of his game. It's that it's going to unlock some things for the rest of the Lakers offense, and that's good news.
You know, Mike, we do have one question that's kind of tangentially related. Zach Tan asks, why is it that all of a sudden we've been shooting the three so well? Obviously, part of that is Lonzo. And is there anybody else you want to highlight from beyond the arc in terms of why the Lakers' three-point percentage has risen over these last couple months?
Yeah, look, a lot of guys are shooting the three ball well right now. KCP just made eight, even though he didn't shoot well in Atlanta. He made eight in Sacramento. Josh Hart has been shooting the three-pointer really well. Brandon Ingram has gotten much better. I just mentioned he's over 50% in February.
Yep.
And I'm sure that at some point, I'm sure Joey will do a piece on this for Lakers.com And you can kind of trace the three-point shooting going up. But part of that, too, is just the rotation that they've been using has included a couple more shooters now, which includes Isaiah Thomas coming off the bench. And Thomas is an upgrade on Clarkson from three. You know, so that it's just their – I think it's a mix of them getting comfortable in their offense and a mix of guys just returning closer to what their career form was. Or – so the other part about the Lakers improving from three is just that the young players – have all had some additional time and to get reps to shoot threes in practice. And so you've seen Lonzo, you've seen Ingram, you've seen Kuzma. Although actually Kuzma's kind of a counterexample because he was shooting the three better at the start of the year than he has been overall lately. But everybody else, it seems like production has increased from that range. And so that's certainly been a good thing for the Lakers.
Yeah, and to add on to that, I would also say more playmaking in the rotation. When you have, obviously, Brandon, like we talked about, has stepped up his playmaking for others. And I think Isaiah Thomas is a little bit more of a traditional, let me set up my guys kind of point guard than Jordan Clarkson was. Although Isaiah can also score the ball, as we've seen, too. Going off of what you just said, though, we have a question from David who says, why has Kuzma been in a slump this long? And do you have any theories on why Kyle is kind of, he hasn't been shooting the ball exactly as well as he did, like you said, in the beginning of the season?
Well, a couple of things on this. So he is definitely shooting. He's having his worst shooting month. Let's see. So he's at 37%, about 38% from the field and 32% from three. Compare that to his November numbers. He was at 49% from the field and 39% from three. You know, so and same thing in December, he was 40% from three, 44% from the field. So Kuzma takes a lot. First of all, he takes a lot of threes. So almost half, in fact, almost exactly half of his attempts from the field are from three. And therefore, his percentage is going to be low. There's only a couple players in the league can get away with that and still have a really high percentage. And, you know, one of them happens to be the best shooter of all time in Steph Curry. So I think that it's understandable that as his attempts have gone up, from three, the percentage is going to go down a little bit. I think that he also has just not been as featured of a piece of the Lakers offense of late. You can look at his field goal attempts, for example. So in December, when a bunch of guys were hurt, and that included Lonzo, that included Brook Lopez, you know, Randall was still coming off the bench, so Kuzma was starting. He was getting 16 shots a night. In February, he's getting 11.6 shots a night. So I just don't think he's had the chance to really establish his rhythm on offense, and that's been a part of it. So and there's also Joey, maybe a little element of him just falling back to earth, at least to an extent. But to me, the percentages for Kuzma are curious. How would you react to this? The percentages aren't as important because he's such a threat to shoot. He's such a quick release that defenses are now instantly reacting to him, particularly on the perimeter. And so that continues to be a good thing for LA's offense, even if the shots aren't going in to the same degree and his percentage is, you know, 34 or 35 instead of 45 or 44. So that's the one thing that still means that he's still giving you some production there, even when he's not hitting a shot as consistently.
Yeah. We've talked about this before that I think it was ESPN's Kevin Pelton did a story on the influence of 3-point shooting in terms of spacing and that volume is more important than accuracy. If you're a guy who puts up a lot of 3-point shots, then defenses will react to you more than a guy who takes two a game but makes one of them consistently. It's I don't know if it's a psychological thing. I don't know if it's a strategy thing, but for some reason guys tend to jump out more on guys who put up shots, and Kuzma does that. And like you're saying, just by the quickness of his shot, he's a guy that if you're going to run out on him, you have to do so quickly. So he is providing the Lakers that spacing, and I would like to kind of counter to that. I would like to see him go down low some more and post up. He's got a pretty good post up game. He's got that running hook. He's and especially the first 10 or so games of the season, he was really good at operating around the basket and around the paint. So I would like to see a few more of those attempts. But I think that he's just hit a point in his rookie season where he needs to shoot himself out of it. If he's still providing that spacing, if the defenses are still reacting to him, then you're still getting that, which is important to the other four guys on the floor. And I wouldn't worry too much about Kuzma. Moving on to another question from a lot of people asked this one, including Josh Kamaga, who asks, what are the chances of the Lakers re-signing Isaiah Thomas or kind of around that, what is your evaluation of Isaiah Thomas and this small sample size that he's been the Laker?
Okay, so this is it's a tough question in that, you know, we really don't have any insight into what Magic or Rob Pelinka are thinking, and that's about the only, those are about the only two opinions, you know, maybe Luke Walton's and, you know, Jesse Buss, Jeannie Buss, Joey Buss. Those are the only opinions that really matter on this front. We do know that Rob said they're going to take a look at all of the Lakers' own free agents to be, and that list is top-lined by Julius Randle. You know, then you can take your pick who's next on that list. Is it KCP? Is it Brooke Lopez? Is it Isaiah Thomas? Is it, you know, one of those players? And they, whether or not they have space to do so depends in part on what they do in free agency. So that's sort of the general safe statement there. Evaluating his game, on the other hand, is something we can do, Joey. And I'll say this first. I'll try to be brief so that you can pick up on Thomas. He doesn't have the same explosiveness and that the ability to be explosive because of the hip injury. And in fact, Joey did a lot of work on this and sent me a long sort of explanation and breakdown of Isaiah's, you know, how much he finished at the rim this year compared to last year, how much he's able to finish on jump shots, what his percentages are and all those facets, where he's getting on the floor. And Joey, maybe you could give us a general summary of that reflects what we've seen so far with Isaiah in the Lakers, which is similar to what his numbers were in Cleveland.
Yeah, it's basically, as you were saying, it's that Isaiah, so let's begin with the obvious. Isaiah's 5'9", and that might even be generous. He's the smallest player in the league, and when you're the smallest player in the league, it's going to be very hard to score against the rim protectors of this league. Now, the reason, and so that's why it was so amazing, so sensational that Isaiah was arguably the best driver in the league last year, best slasher, best driver, best guy at taking the ball to the rim and scoring there. And a lot of that has to do with the velocity that he played with. He's very good when it comes to changing gears, going to the hoop. He's very good at putting into 12th gear and just going straight out of rim protector, kind of balling himself up and then uncurling at the end to get a layup. And that's what made Isaiah special. He's a very good three-point shooter. He's a good playmaker. But what made him special was the way that he attacked the basket, especially at his height. Now, with his hip injury, he's lost a good amount of that velocity, and he's admitted to this in interviews himself, that with that hip, it's harder for him to explode to the rim, and you're seeing that because, you know, defenses are able to stop him there. Rim protectors aren't fearing him as much, and they're able to block him, they're able to deter him from getting what he wants at the rim. Now, the one thing that Isaiah still can do, though, is draw two defenders, which is something that the Lakers really didn't have from anybody on this roster prior to trading for Isaiah. And I think that's been a really nice revelation for Isaiah, because you're seeing him get 5, 6, maybe 4 assists every night coming in off the bench and just giving the Lakers kind of what they need, because he's so good at driving and then kicking out or running a pick and roll with Julius Randle or Ivica Zubac. And speaking of Zoo, one of the things that you notice with Isaiah is because he's drawing those two defenders, he'll have his own defender, and then you need a help defender or a rim protector to come over and make sure that he doesn't score at the rim. Because he's drawing that extra help, you have guys like Zoo come in and grab an offensive rebound and put it in. I think Zoo had 4 of them, not last night, but the game before. And that's what has been termed the Kobe assist over recent years, where you have a guy who just soaks up so much defensive attention that even if he misses the shot, you have a good chance at an offensive rebound and a putback. And obviously you want that shot to go in on its own more than you want it to miss and have a nice chance of a cleanup. But I think there is value in the fact that Isaiah, even if he isn't scoring at the rim, he is a magnet for defenders. And that's something that is a nice wrinkle to the Lakers offense.
For sure, Joey. What's next in the mailbag?
Next up in the mailbag, this is another one that we got a lot of questions about, and I'm curious to your answer, Mike. A lot of people want to know, including Enrique Becerra, maybe? Sorry, Enrique. In order for the Lakers to make a playoff run, and the Lakers right now are in the 11th spot, I believe, who are going to be the key contributors, and what do you just in general feel about the Lakers' chances of a playoff run? To give a little bit of context, the Blazers got the 8th seed last year, and they were an exactly 500 team, 41-41. And the Denver Nuggets this year are kind of on a pace to blow that out of the water, and Denver is currently in the eighth spot, and Denver is 33-27. So over the next, over the last 22 games, Denver just has to win 9 in order to surpass Portland. And meanwhile, the Clippers and the Jazz are both in front of the Lakers as well in the standings. So general thoughts about a hot Lakers team that has won 3 in a row and 7 of their last 10. But do you think that what how do you feel about a potential playoff run here?
Well, I just don't think there's enough time left. Now, that's not – I think that the team should not be worrying about that. They should be trying to win as many games as they can. And if just by some circumstance all the other teams ahead of them in the West are struggling and, you know, things become close, then you can have some fun with it. But I'd say that's just a long shot, because the West this year, it's strange. So you have Houston and Golden State, right, who are by far in a way better than everybody else. So there's a 12-game gap in the loss column between Golden State and Minnesota at the 2-3. Right, that's 14 losses for Golden State, 26 for Minnesota. So while you have the third best team has a big gap there, what you have is a very, very small gap between the third and even the 10, which is Utah. Utah is 31-30 in 10th place. The Clippers are 31-27. So that means that all of those teams are kind of sucking up those middle range of wins, and it's going to make it that much tougher for a team like the Lakers, who are already 7 games out with only, you know, 22 odd games to play for a lot of these teams. So that's just a ton of ground to make up, even if those teams above them were bad. And in this case, you know, Denver's playing well. They're getting Millsap back. Oklahoma City is just there with that same number of losses. Portland isn't showing any signs of decline. We thought that New Orleans was going to take a big drop, and instead they've won 6 in a row with Anthony Davis just playing out of his mind lately since DeMarcus Cousins got hurt, and that included, of course, that win over the Lakers. So there's just the path above them is so cluttered. However, here's the way to look at it if you're somebody that's pulling for the Lakers. So over the summer, they're going to add something to this young roster, to this young core. Now the Lakers will, you know, they'll likely lose some of the veteran players that they have, but those veteran players, you know, haven't necessarily been carrying the day for them. And you figure, especially if you had a key free agent and another draft pick. Then you can kind of look at that December period where the Lakers had 9 games. I swear to God, in every podcast you and I have had so far, we've kind of had to alluded to that spot where they lost twice in overtime to the Warriors, and they lost all these guys, blah, blah, blah. You're probably sick of hearing me discuss this. But the reason I say it is that if a couple of those actually go your way, the Lakers' way, then, you know, they're maybe even a little bit closer to the playoff mix this year, let alone next year, when Ingram has another year under his belt, when Lonzo has another year under his belt, when Kuzma has another year, when Josh Hart, when whoever's added in free agency. So there's optimism to be gained from the fact that the Lakers have already matched last year's win total without really adding, you know, a ton of production other than your second overall pick in Lonzo Ball. And, you know, then KCP, who's been picking it up lately, Brooke Lopez kind of has been contributing here and there, and certainly better in some games than others. But that's the way that I'd look at it right now, is that the short answer from this is no. It's probably too much to climb for this year. But, you know, they're going to be in better shape moving ahead.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. And I think it's worth noting that the Lakers have as many wins as they did last season, and there are still 22 games left in this season. So definite improvement. And I think they're on the track to the postseason, which is something that Daniel Green asked about. He says, do you think the Lakers are one player away from being a playoff team like Jimmy Butler was to Minnesota, kind of making that equivalence between Minnesota last year where they had Towns, they had Wiggins, they had the Towns, Wiggins, and
Last year was LaVine before they traded him.
That's right. Yep.
That was the kind of their, you know, Gorgui Dieng was starting, and at the point guard spot, they had Ricky Rubio, of course, before they made that move to get Teague this year.
So he's kind of making that comparison to two young teams that look like they're ready for the next step. And if you bring in a guy like Jimmy Butler was to Minnesota, can the Lakers be that team? And Jimmy Butler's really good. He's a top 10 player. I think it's no question if you add somebody of his caliber to a Lakers squad or to many squads, then that's a playoff team. I'm curious, what do you think about just that in general, where the Lakers are, like, in terms of development as this young core?
Yeah, it just depends. If they're getting better, period, because of the young core, how soon they get better, it depends on what free agents you get and, you know, what the draft pick is and what guys that if you don't get the free agent, who you re-sign. So it just, there's too many things to judge there, the too many unknowns right now to predict what's going to happen next year. Other than the young core is going to keep improving, and you know the win total should increase in kind. We just don't know if it's going to be a lot or you know progressively next year based on what the roster moves are.
Yeah. A lot of people want to know about Julius Randle, who's obviously one of the who's part of the young core and part of this year's offseason discussion. Charlie Peppers, I think Charlie Peppers. I might have gotten my questions mixed up. Either way, a lot of people want to know what Julius Randle's value is to this team and potentially to free agency.
Well, here, look. Since I've started on most of these, let me give you this one so I stop taking all the red meat and leave you with scraps before. So you can go ahead on this one, Joey.
So Julius Randle, I think you can argue has made. I actually Brandon Inger, we've talked about, has made such a huge improvement this season. It's probably him. But at the same time, Julius Randle has given him a run for his money for most improved Laker this year, at least in my evaluation, because Julius is a guy who has taken his game to the elite echelon in terms of pick and roll scoring. He's one of the best at diving to the rim and just imposing his will down there. Lately, he has become one of the best post-up players in the game, and the numbers haven't quite reflected that in terms of the season, but over the last, I want to say, 10 games, he is just imposing his will on whichever power forward, small forward, center, whoever it is. He is getting it done down low against whoever's matched up against him. He's also a good playmaker. He's also a switchable defender, and he's a guy who can get you a rebound if you need one. He's a guy who can get you a bucket if you need one. He still can't, you know, stretch it out with his shooting. He still doesn't finish with his right hand very much, but he's a guy who I think his value has really soared this season, and he fits in nicely with what the Lakers want to do, which is run up and down the floor. He's a very mobile power forward. And we've heard Kobe use this saying before that he's Lamar Odom and Zach Randolph's body. And I think this year, more than any other year, we're seeing that. Just that versatile game, but that can still just overpower you if that's what needs to be done. And the league is going in a direction where you have the Clint Capellas, you have the Steven Adams, you have a guy like Dwight Powell in Dallas whose stock is really rising. That type of player, that guy who can just run screen and roll and finish efficiently at the rim, that is a valuable player in today's game, and I think Julius reflects that a lot.
So if you look at Julius Randle's production this season, it's literally improved every month. Now, part of the reason for that is that his minutes have gone up every month, or at least approximated that, and they're certainly the highest they've been. They're at 31.9 right now in February, and here are the numbers: 19.4 points, 58.9% from the field. The free throws were up, actually, until he went 0-for-5 at Sacramento, and that brought the rest of the numbers down. So now he's at, like, 61%. So that's not good. Rebounds, 9.0. Assists, 4.3. And the one area where I think Julius can still grow, so he's really good defensively in a lot of different ways. He can switch 1-5 for the most part. He can hold up against some of the bigger centers. He can get switched on to a point guard and keep and follow with his feet. So that right there has a lot of value, especially in today's NBA. So that's great. However, just a little bit like Brandon Ingram, he's still learning in the context of where to be and when and what to do defensively, and he still spends a lot of his energy on offense. So I think that that's reflected in the fact that he's only at 0.6 steals and 0.7 blocks. But those are numbers that you would like to see go up some, just as he but, you know, he also doesn't have the longest arms in the world, so he's not going to be the deflections king. Maybe ever, but I'd like to see those numbers go up a little bit. But again, that's nitpicking for some really good numbers. And I was talking to one of the Lakers assistant coaches that works a lot with Julius yesterday, and the whole discussion with him, it's been very encouraging for the Lakers, I think, because they, at the beginning of the season, you know, what you weren't sure is how much he was going to get better from last year, but I think he's really had an emphatic answer, and that he's gotten considerably better. And that's made them have to think about this offseason at least differently in some senses. And, you know, what people have to remember with Randle, just because they didn't sign the extension in October, they still have his rights. Like, they still can, if somebody else is going to offer him a contract, the Lakers still have the option to match. And so that if he's not on the team next year, it will be because the Lakers have chosen, you know, not to keep him on the team for one specific reason or the other, and whether that's free agency or a trade or whatever it might be, that's all to be seen, and only Magic and Rapalinka know exactly what's going to happen there. But the good news is that Randle has just worried about his game. He's just worried about how he's looked on the basketball court. He's worked out hard over the summer. He's tried his hardest. He's figured out ways to improve his game. He's gotten smarter about where and when to shoot. He's doing all these things, Joey, that put him in better shape moving forward, and then ideally, you know, from the Lakers' perspective, them as well. So that's, I understand why people have been curious about Julius all year, and rightfully so. And the good news is that so far, whatever he's been doing has been working.
Yeah, and I think that so much has been made about his development, about shooting, and the fact that he has not shot the ball hardly at all this season, and that he's just said, hey, I'm going to take high efficiency shots around the rim, and I know I can get those shots, be it in pick and roll or post up or just cutting to the basket. I think that shows a lot about the way we evaluate players. I think that because we're in this modern NBA where everybody has to shoot three pointers, and the minute Julius came into the NBA, it's how can we get this guy to shoot three pointers? He needs to shoot three pointers. The fact that he's found out what works for him, I think, is a testament to his own development. And, you know, maybe one day he will get to shooting, and he'll become something of a perimeter threat. But for now, I think that the Lakers are pretty pleased with what he's providing. A couple more, Mike. Michelle T. wants to know, how do you feel about Kobe's comments about free agency? If we have to convince you to come to play for L.A., then you're not the one. You and I usually talk about more about, like, on-the-court things, rather than, you know, what Kobe's saying or what's swirling around off the floor. But this one, I was kind of curious about your answer.
Well, Joey, don't discourage random off-the-floor deep dives on various players over the years. How dare you? I'm happy to answer this Kobe question. I would say Kobe's been saying this for years. This has always been Kobe's thing. Kobe wants people and players to understand what he understands about the Lakers, which is you know, sort of assumed, I think, by Kobe to be understood by Magic and by Kareem and by Jerry West and by Shaq and by the other legends of Lakers lore. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that opinion on it. I totally get what he's trying to get across, which is just simply that, look, this, if you don't see the value of this particular situation of being the guy coming in and having a chance to lead this Lakers team, and especially one that's loaded with this kind of a talent, then why would the Lakers, you know, even, like, why would somebody not recognize that? So I get that perspective on Kobe. You could just as easily push back on the other side and say, well, hey, it never hurts to recruit somebody once free agency opens, and sort of try to sell them on what the benefits of a situation are. So I'm understanding of Kobe. That's consistent with what he said over the years, and I would probably go somewhere in the middle of that perspective, and then also just finding a way to point out the better things about your situation to somebody that you want to join you. So both things can be true, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think that the NBA is becoming a lot more like the college game, where you're kind of having to recruit guys more. And I mean, you look at Alabama football. Nick Saban has won like 105 national titles in 106 years, and he still has to go out to recruits' houses and sell them on Alabama. So I think that's just part of the game now. I think it's just part of what you have to do. You have to make sure guys, especially the cream of the crop guys, want to know, hey, why should I come here? What can you offer me? And you do have to sell them a little bit, but I do, like, you see where Kobe's coming from, and that guys need to at least have that wire in them that I understand what the Lakers stand for, and if I'm going to be the man here, I know what I'm getting myself into, and I want to embrace that. Last question, Mike. Speaking of Kobe, JT wants to know, can you predict the next Lakers statue after Elgin Baylor? And I think this one's pretty obvious.
No, yeah. Look, Kobe is next on the list. I don't think there's any question about it. Kobe will be enshrined in the Hall of Fame in, was it two more, I guess, three more years?
Yeah, three.
Yes?
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily have to, like Jeannie Buss said this on Mason Ireland the other day. You know, they didn't wait for the full five-year period for Shaq's jersey retirement. Obviously, they didn't wait for Kobe's retirement either. Now, they could wait, though, until he actually goes into the Hall of Fame to make the statue, I guess. It doesn't really matter, because ultimately, of course, that's going to come in the coming years. If I were gonna think of a different statue that could go up, you could certainly make a good argument for the greatest owner in team sports history, Dr. Jerry Buss.
Yep,
I think everybody would be happy to see a statue of Dr. Jerry Buss. I am biased towards big game James Worthy, as we get to work with him so often on the Spectrum show that we have here. So, but it's tough, man. Like most teams a lot of teams can barely even retire a legitimate jersey. And the Lakers, meanwhile, have so many great players that it's tough to figure what the next statue is going to be. And if, you know, Kobe gets one, then where do you go after that? Do you go to the ownership? Do you go back and hit another Showtime Laker who's in the Hall of Fame and won championships like big game James? You know, so it's a tough one. I don't know how many statues you can have out there, but why not, man? Keep building them as long as the guys are worthy of them. And the Lakers certainly have, no pun intended there, the Lakers certainly have more on the list even after Kobe.
Yeah, and they share a building with the Kings, who have a couple statues out there, and Oscar De La Hoya is out there. You think maybe the Sparks might get some players out there. So I don't know. Staples Center is going to have a lot of statues. It's going to be like circled by statues by the next 20 years or something like that.
You know, look, Monument Park at Yankee Stadium, I've been there a couple times, and they have a lot of legends too. So that's just what happens, man. When you have success, there's going to be a couple more statues. I don't think you have to look at it like it. I don't think it cheapens the statues that are there by adding more statues, because, you know, Magic is still Magic. Kareem is still Kareem.
Sure, yeah.
Jerry West is still Jerry West, right? And that's not going to change. Now you have Shaq on the side of the building. I'm not sure what Elgin's pose is going to be or where he's going to go, but we can debate on a further pod what the Kobe pose should be. Should he be up on the scorer's table with his arms out? Should he be holding the release of his fadeaway jump shot? I mean, there are a lot of different ways you could go. It could be a fist pump, right? There are a lot of different things you could do with Kobe, but we'll save that until it becomes a little bit more imminent.
All right, Mike, we've kept you in your hotel room far too long for a guy in Miami, so we'll let you go, and we'll see how the Lakers do against the Heat.
Joey, it's been my pleasure. Have a good rest of the day in Los Angeles, and I will be back in like a week. That seems like a long time.
Sounds good.
Have a good one, bud.
Oh, did he put Person in the popcorn machine?
Yeah, Person ran at him out of control, and he paid the price.